with those chairs, one Christmas, my parents are really cruel, so they bought me a cheap Argos swivel chair because they thought I'd study more if I had a chair. So I brought it outside and started rolling around on the tarmac.
Neve, what age were you?
Jeez, maybe 14. But it was like, it was fighting back against the unfunness of the chair, was to use it in a fun way. But, you know, the neighbours will see, so you had to stop.
14. The same age as an Ava Pilish. But I guess you had your swivel chair.
Remember when I was about 11, my parents bought me a game called Word Shark. And it was a video game about learning to spell, because I was really bad at spelling. And they thought the problem was that I didn't have a video game that taught me how to spell, not the, like, dyslexia. And so I was like, oh, cool. They're like, we got a new video game. And I was like, awesome. And it was like the most weird, rudimentary kind of, like, all the game was set against, like, a blue background and just these circles with teeth with words on them. And you had to, like, type in. It was fucking weird, and I hated it. And I don't think there's ever been so much pain or strife in that household as the day they bought me that game.
Did you have to sit at a certain, like, you have to do an hour of your word game?
Yes. Play your game, John.
I remember for 1 year in primary school, my after-school extracurricular, like, lessons weren't, like, drama or anything like that, but it was typing lessons.
Mavis Beacon?
What?
Mavis Beacon? Mavis Beacon typing?
No.
She was a lady who... Sorry, Brian, you go on.
It was a Mavis. This was, you go into an old building and they have typewriters and you put on headphones and you type words.
So it wasn't like a computer typing course? It was a...
No, this is Cork in the 90s. It was typewriters.
Welcome to the Let's Fight a Boss cast. It is Friday, September 2nd.
Yep.
I'm sitting here with the Boss Rush, the mechanical man who has no feelings, Neve.
Hey.
That's so good.
And also, Empress of Tomorrow, Brian.
That's right.
And with you always, I am your host, John. So, guys, I watched Indie Game the Movie 2, the sequel to Indie Game the Movie, and I was really pumped about it because Indie Game the Movie is like one of my favorite documentaries. I fucking love it.
It's a beloved film.
A beloved film. And I was really pumped to watch this, and about half an hour in, I was still super pumped. I messaged you guys about it. I was like, this is going to be awesome.
I watched it straight after.
And that film like is like a really solid 40 minutes. The only problem is it kind of keeps going after that. Like, I felt like it gets into all this interesting stuff about what happened to guys after the events of Indie Game the Movie, and then it gets on into all this really interesting, like, internet hate stuff and how, like, you know, they were treated and how Phil Fish kind of fucked himself and all this kind of stuff. But then it just kind of keeps going, and then it just starts looking at other indie game developers, but they're not given enough time to build up a story, and it's like, yep, he's talking about his video game. How do you guys feel? You both watched it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of the same. I think I know the guy you're talking about who made the iPad game with the planets.
Yeah.
He was really weird inclusion in it because they were all talking about how much time that it was, like, 5 years, 4 years, and how it just kind of consumed them. And this guy was like, oh yeah, it was, like, awful. It was, like, 5 months out of my life that was, like, really hard. And it's like, in comparison to everyone else, it really felt out of place and kind of shoehorned in there.
And I felt like that's maybe interesting to someone who knows that game, but that was so not the appeal of the first one. Like, I could show my parents Indie Game the Movie and they'd be into it. I don't feel like I could show them the second one, you know?
That felt like a little advert for his game.
Yeah, totally.
It was kind of like, oh, maybe I should look at that.
Yeah.
It was definitely just, they have the aftermath footage and all the B-roll of the games that didn't make it into the original film.
Yeah. It really felt like that.
That's all it is. I have no interest in playing Spelunky, but I like the guy who made Spelunky. I just thought it was real interesting that he explains why he made the game and he explains his algorithm for the roguelike generator that he has for making the maps. I thought that was really, really interesting. And the way he wanted to make a platformer, but you couldn't go left or right, so he instead decided, how about you just go down? It's a really, really simple
solution. Yeah, it was cool seeing how, like, it was all blocked out in the grid and everything.
And showed him at the game jams and everything. Like, he just seemed like a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, he did.
But he's in the movie for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I kind of wish there was more of him. I really like that guy.
And less of Phil Fish.
Yeah.
Again. I really liked, because my main experience of Phil Fish had been the first movie, and I was really interested to see why people hate him so much. And man, after that first conference where he's like, Japanese games are trash, you know? And like, I feel like every point he made was valid, but he did it in like the most dickish way possible.
But even then it was the Braid guy, what's his name?
Jonathan Blow. Yeah.
Jonathan Blow was the one that actually like was more articulate.
Clarified.
Yeah, and clarified. Kind
of what he thought.
And that would have been a few months after the most recent Zelda game, Skyward Sword, would have come out, and that game is just, it's not fun to play.
It's the first bad Zelda game.
It's got 45 minutes of, like, unskippable tutorials.
Yeah.
Like, it's not what a Japanese game should be.
No.
The movie did a great thing where it talked about the controversy about this, then it let Phil Fish explain his side, and he was kind of really downplaying it. And then they were like, okay, here's the full interaction.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you're an asshole. How can you downplay that even with hindsight and seeing the video? That was so cruel.
I think Fez was done. He was success. Thought he was invincible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But he was just a dick. Like.
Thank you for excellent movies. And I'm a freelance game programmer. And in this movie, you were inspired from... and Super Mario, and Metroid, and Rockman. I am so proud of it, and as a Japanese. And my question is, could you tell me recently Japanese, what do you think about recently Japanese game?
Is it what is about Japanese games that inspired us?
Recent. I'm sorry.
They suck. I'm sorry, like, you guys need to get with the times and make better interfaces and, like, update your technology. We're totally kicking your ass. Back then, you guys were the king of the world, but your time has passed. I'm so sorry.
Did you look at his face? Look at what you did, Phil.
But yeah, I was not as hot on that film as I thought it was going to be.
Nah.
It's still decent, but... I don't really know why you'd watch it, especially if you've kind of seen the first one already.
It felt like DVD extras rather than an actual documentary.
That's absolutely how it felt. I also watched Star Trek 3. I don't remember the subtitle.
Star Trek Beyond.
Picture the most average Hollywood sequel you possibly could. And that is exactly what that film is. Like, it's possibly the most film I've ever seen. It's nothing.
Is it a good summer blockbuster in that it ticks boxes?
It ticks boxes, but it doesn't add anything.
Like, the summer blockbusters that I've seen this year were shit.
Yeah.
Like, just not good.
I think other people like this movie. I can't imagine why. Like, it's just, you're watching it and you're like, okay, this is gonna happen. And now this will happen. And, like, I don't like to try and predict movies. I think that's a real good way to, like kill a movie when you're watching it. But it was just so... It's like any life or energy was just not in it. Maybe there's a bunch of stuff in there for, like, Star Trek fans. I don't know. But I don't know Star Trek too well. The new girl was cool.
Jayla, yeah. That's kind of what
she was. She was really cool. But even then, the most I could say about her is her design's pretty cool. Like, she's fine.
Mm.
There is the most cringe-inducing use of licensed music I have ever seen.
Did they do Beastie Boys again?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
At one point, they need to sabotage something. And so Sabotage starts playing.
But they used that song in the first movie.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
When it shows Kirk as a kid and he's joyriding.
And you see, it's a callback to the first movie. It's like in this new trilogy.
It's like poetry, Brian. It rhymes.
But, like, you know how something... Like, you know how in the Edgar Wright movies he has a reference to cornetos?
Yeah.
But it's a different flavor of cornetto in Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and End of the World.
Yeah.
But In the first Star Trek, they use sabotage. In the second Star Trek, they use body moving. And in the third Star Trek, they use sabotage.
Where the fuck's Heart Attack Man? Use Heart Attack Man. Have Captain Hurt get a heart attack.
Why didn't they use Intergalactic? For fuck's sake.
Yeah, but it's just... I don't know. It's really not a good movie. Like it's not bad. There's nothing awful in it. Everything in it's like a solid 5 out of 10. But to me, that's like the worst kind of movie. Like, I wish they had swung for the fences and made a piece of shit that I could at least get excited about, you know?
Mm.
But, yeah. What I did watch, however, that was amazing, was NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. WWE Developmental League. And I am so full-blown back into wrestling right now. I'm so excited. This is the best thing ever. I don't want to go on about it too much because I know people don't listen to this for wrestling. But for God's sake, just check out Asuka versus Bayley. If I showed you the...
I watched the fight.
What'd you think?
You're right, it's emotional.
It's so good, isn't it?
So good. It's a really good fight.
Yep. And it's like the way they build it up and like... I don't want to say too much, but people should... If you are at all interested in wrestling, totally, totally check out that. It's NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. SummerSlam was really good as well. Wrestling's getting really weird because no one can tell what's real and what's not anymore.
Is John Cena still the main guy?
So John Cena had a wrestling match at SummerSlam against AJ Styles, who's the new big bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And John Cena could not beat him. And for like the first time in fucking ever, a heel beat John Cena clean. And he's so upset. And he sits up at the ring. Like, he sits up in the ring, like, after the match. And he takes off his little armband that says, never give up. And he leaves it in the ring. And he walks away sad to silence.
Oh, shit.
And AJ Styles is such a good heel that the next night on Raw, he had the never give up headband around his head. And he was like going, I'm John Cena. I'm John Cena. And all the good wrestlers were like, shut up, AJ. I'm going to stop talking about wrestling now, but wrestling's really good right now, guys, and the women's division's fucking amazing. There's so many, so many good wrestlers.
There's also a female wrestler called AJ, isn't there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I think she's called AJ or something very similar. She was involved with CM Punk.
Okay.
Romantically. And sure. Then CM Punk got fired on their wedding day.
And how about Paige? What's she doing?
Paige is still floating around. Right now, she has been she's been suspended for a wellness violation, which means that Paige might have gotten into some of those wacky steroids.
Paige?
Yeah. Me and Brian know Paige because we found her in a Channel 4 documentary like 4 years ago.
Yeah, and she was like 17, 18 at the time. It was crazy. And they were doing like auditions for wrestling, but it was in like a secret location, so they had to like they filmed them going there, but then they had to stop filming and then start filming again.
Yep.
It was top secret.
There's a lot of secrecy with wrestling. But anyway, with that, we are going to move into our strategy talk. Neve, tell us about Deus Ex, Mankind Divided.
I finished it today.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Congrats.
25 to 30 hours. They don't give you a timer on it, which I hate.
Yeah.
I don't like when games don't do that. They just give you a date and the current time played. It's good, but I think it's good for Deus Ex fans.
Right.
If you haven't played Human Revolution, I find it hard to recommend. Because it has a very slow start. You start off and you have an option to watch a 12-minute video where it kind of summarizes everything. And that seems slow. Then you go into a kind of a tutorial mission where you have all your powers. And then those powers are stripped from you in a kind of Metroid-esque way.
Yeah, that sounds like Metroid.
Yep.
Which they justify with the story really well enough. Like, it was fine. I was fine with it. But there was no kind of defining moment that pushed you at the start to kind of go through the game. So it's kind of a little, how do I get into this? I didn't know why Adam was motivated. Like, where the last game, there was a motivation behind it.
Do you think they were just like, ah, look, you get it?
I think it was part of the game design being met at some stage and the story being met separately and kind of working them in. Because there's a few things that kind of give me that idea. there's a mission later on, and you get a decision to either break into a bank or save a woman who was a bomb maker. And they're pretty, like, there are two options, and one mission gets cancelled depending on the one you take.
Right.
And if you take the bank mission, they're like, oh, Jensen, you have to break into a bank. That's shocking. I had already broken into that bank in a side quest. And he was like, you expect me to break into a bank? And I was like, I've done it. Everything's cleared. The cameras are off. Like, it's done.
Oh my God.
So that was like such an oversight. And that mission couldn't be done after that main mission, because before you get to that main mission, they go, all your side missions will be cancelled if you don't finish them before this point in the story. So that just seems like a bit of an accident of writing versus the gameplay kind of thing.
Just bad planning.
Yeah, bad planning. So there's little stuff like that that kind of make it hard to get into. But if you give yourself over to the game and give yourself over to the story, there's so much fun. Because like, the gameplay is so good. It's like French Metal Gear. I'm playing it like all stealth, so I'm doing hacking and stealth mechanics. I've tried not to kill anyone. I've accidentally killed a few things on them by accident. But it's like, it's so fun gameplay wise. And then the mini missions, the side missions, are really entertaining. The level design is great. Like, as I said, going through that bank, they just told me there's a CEO on the top floor and you need to find some information in her office. I had this entire bank and it was up to me to figure out how to get up there. And it was crazy. It took me like 3-4 hours to get through everything.
And from the sounds of it, that's a mission that you might not necessarily even see.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't
that's
have
cool.
to do it.
That's really cool.
Cool.
Yeah, there's some really good side stuff in it, and just enjoyable gameplay, enjoyable moments.
So what's the breakdown of, like, say, story stuff? Because to me, Deus Ex always seems like a real story-heavy thing.
It is. That's where it breaks down, because it's like, it's set in Prague. And it's set in this world where you've split up the augmented people versus the natural people. And they're really trying to sell you the story that being augmented means you're disenfranchised. You're like, my apartment's now in the poor side of town.
Which now, if I'm not mistaken, in the previous game, were augs not something that rich people had?
Yes.
By choice, but working class people had it as well for labor.
Yeah.
For like factory workers.
Right.
Factory workers and say like hired mercs were given augmentations by the company they worked for to make it easier.
Just improve their abilities.
Yeah.
So
carry
more stuff.
And like, is there much of a visual difference between like the augs of the rich people and the augs of the poor?
No, in this world, that's the biggest problem. This is 2 years after the first game. And in the first game, they established that rich people get augs, or companies augment these working class people. And then in the space of 2 years after the aug incident, where that's when all the augs went mad because someone flipped a switch and they attacked people, they're now trying to say the whole world is segregated. And it's segregated to the point where there's actually infrastructure. Like when you get on a train, there's an aug line and a natural line. If you get in the natural cart, once you get off, a cop will stop you and ask to look at your papers. So they're really like, this is a, like, separated world.
That sounds a little on the nose, is it?
It is on the nose, but it's also, it doesn't deal with it much, nearly.
Is it more just like, here's how things are?
It's kind of, yeah, it's a backdrop to stuff, but
kind
it's
kind of like BioShock Infinite
backdrop.
With race.
Yeah.
It's never really discussed, it's just glossed over.
I was actually just thinking about the Matthew Matosas video of that today. That was so good.
If they're using some place like Prague is what I consider kind of like a bridge between kind of the rich part of Europe and Eastern Europe, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, the whole idea of, like, papers, please,
yeah,
would definitely be associated with somewhere like Prague, because it's right on the edge of kind of two different classes of people, I guess.
And Prague is a great city for it in that reason as well, and just architecturally.
Oh yeah, in terms of architecture, yeah.
It's a really pretty looking game, and there's no load times.
Wow.
You go on a load between, like, massive areas, and then you can go in and out of shops, like down sewers, like no load times whatsoever that are discernible. It's crazy.
How is the upgrade system?
Good. I got through, I'd say, 70% of the game before I ever tried out a new power that's
really?
In this game.
Shit, wow.
Because I didn't need them. All the new powers are kind of more tailored to if you're going down a route where you want to kill people.
Yeah.
So I picked this taser power because that's the non-lethal one. So I was more interested in boosting all my hacking stuff, which are old powers. So I never really got into that side of thing.
Yeah.
I think I might play a murder run just to kind of get the use out of that stuff.
That's interesting, because I played through most of Hyper Light Drifter in the last week, and one thing I found about that is, like, every time I got a new power, it changed how I played the game. And it was really, really cool. And, like, by the end, I didn't have any upgrades or anything like that, but I was taking so much less damage just because I had upgraded the abilities and they just allow me to do so much more.
This does have that, like, I upgraded my jump, so now I could reach higher vents, which opened up a whole another world of exploration for me and how to get into things. That kind of stuff. I upgraded my strength so I could move boxes out of the way, but then again, it's out of the way to get to other vents.
Right, okay.
You know? The level design is fun for that kind of stuff, like just navigating around the world whatever way you want. And the game seems to really push you in a non-lethal try and sneak as much as possible. It's like, it's really two minds, because the story is its weakest aspect, but it's a story-driven game.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. How are the characters? Like, are they fun?
I can't tell you anything about them. Like, are they there? Like, Jensen is the main character. There's a whole pile of characters in it, but I don't know who I would call the second main character. Like, they're all Jensen's boss and work colleagues that he seems to be like, okay, you exist around me and I'm nice to you because I chose to play Jensen as a nice person.
Yeah.
But I think you couldn't play him as any other way because it doesn't seem right.
Yeah, yeah.
So there isn't really another character in it.
Hmm.
Like, even the guy who puts in your augmentations, you see him twice. And he's, like, really, like, they're all really well designed and really well modeled, but he isn't a character. I don't have an emotional attachment to anything.
That sounds like a real problem to me.
Yeah, this is it. So you kind of, if you give yourself over to Jensen being kind of a cold guy who is doing a job and doesn't have many friends or doesn't have really a social life, then you can get a lot out of it. You know, when there's, you really have to kind of role play it in that way.
Yeah.
But if you want to go in with a story, with engaging characters and an engaging kind of overall
I feel
tone,
like
it's not there.
Games have been kind of doing this half step recently where the character isn't a blank slate. Like, he's not, the character isn't like Link from Legend of Zelda, but it's not a fully fleshed out character either.
I don't know if you could say that about Adam, because he's so augmented that, is that just him? Like, he does little things where he'll have a little smile every now and then, or he'll say something where you kind of get, oh, this is just his personality. Like, the whole cereal thing is weird. There's a cutscene of him eating cereal and finding a little toy inside it. And that's probably the most little thing you get of his character, but it's endearing enough that you care about him.
Yeah.
There's a moment where he kind of gets knocked out, and I was like, oh no, Jensen. So it's kind of like, it's not playing as this nearly blank slate character, it's kind of playing as a character who is just kind of maybe autistic. There's like, he's not very emotionally outputting.
Right.
And that's fine for him, and it's endearing in some ways.
You see, like, I don't mind stuff like that at all, as long as they kind of nail it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to have him like that, write him like that, and have it obvious, but it nearly sounds to me like you're saying there's nearly a lot of grey around that.
I think you have to work as a player to kind of accept Jensen for who he is and the Deus Ex world for what it is, and get the most out of it, because the story works against the great gameplay.
Right, right. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I played it like nonstop. I really enjoyed the gameplay.
That's cool. From one dystopian nightmare to another, Brian, tell us about Project Diva X.
Yeah, I played the demo for Project Diva X just before I came over here. And this is the first Hatsune Miku rhythm game for the PS4, I think. And from what I've read about it, is that it doesn't have a huge song library, but it has a lot of like customizable details. And so it's a rhythm game where you play as Hatsune Miku from Vocaloid. She's the most popular singer.
Recently had an advertising shampoo for her virtual hair.
Yeah, she's friends with Scarlett Johansson. And it's a pretty good demo. Like, it's got three hit Miku songs. I played it with my girlfriend who knows all about Hatsune Miku. And it's real weird because it's got the easy option and it's got the normal option, but there's such a gap between what's easy and normal.
Yeah.
Like, easy, you're only using like two buttons, but then on normal you're using like five or six buttons, and there's about three times the amount of prompts.
Wow.
But it does a cool thing where you're like 2 minutes into the song and you'll notice that some of the targets you have to hit are glowing white. And if you hit all of them, you get like a technical bonus where it kind of goes into a different remix of the song.
Well, that's deadly.
And you can win a costume.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
And you can win the costume, but you still have to pass the level to actually receive the costume.
Yeah.
So how does this look? Is this her on stage and these things are flying up and it's the rhythm game you're matching?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. And like it's Miku in 60 frames per second in 1080p and you want to watch that instead because it's her performing. And the more you customize her, it'll always reference that animation on top. So like towards the end, we had her with like a monocle and a harmonica thing around her neck and like a cool plug suit.
Oh, deadly.
Yeah. And it's got another feature as well where you could do a live show, and so you select three songs and you select your costumes for the songs, and then it has a live audience with glow sticks, but you can't see the audience, just glow sticks.
Yeah, you can see, yeah.
But it looks like a real Miku show. Like she's really there.
That's cool.
But it's kind of like half waifu game, half rhythm game. But
yeah.
I think that's what the people want.
Oh, yeah, that's totally what the people want.
Yeah, and it's €45, but I guarantee it'll go on sale very soon.
Yeah, I've got a few like that that I'm kind of keeping my eye on.
Yeah.
And Ryan, you also beat Hyper Light Drifter.
Yeah, I did. I really, really like that game. It's one of my favorite games this year.
Fantastic game. I've been playing it like pretty nonstop for the last couple of days, and I love it.
How long did it take?
I took my time with it, so it took about 7 hours.
I think, like, I'm about the same. And I'm just about to fight the last boss, and I think I could easily spend like another 5 or 6 just exploring the world and figuring out all its weird secrets.
Yeah, there's one ability you get that makes the game like way easier, and I was fighting the final boss and it took me like 20 goes, and then all of a sudden I realized I could do this one trick because of an ability I had, and I beat the boss like right away.
I think I'm okay with that because the difficulty level on it's pretty brutal.
Yeah,
like you get messed up real fast if you're not paying attention.
Is there difficulty modes?
No.
No. Okay.
But it's not too hard either. And anytime you die, you usually just get sent back like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Like,
is it harder than Fury, or Fury?
It's easier than Fury.
Yeah, okay. Way easier.
Way easier.
They have a trophy on PlayStation, for you to beat the game without dying once. So like it is possible. And it is in the game design that you could actually.
I think if I was to replay it, I could give that at least a decent shot.
Yeah, same.
Because, like, you'd know the easiest. It's like there's multiple. Well, not multiple routes to the game, but you can do the game whatever order you want. And so there's definitely bosses I wouldn't fight straight away. Like, I'd get the shotgun straight away because that thing's amazing.
Yeah, the shotgun's really good for clearing out a lot of enemies at once, I guess.
Yeah, and just, goddamn, what a polished game. Like, everything about it just feels so good.
So that's made in a software called Game Maker, isn't it? Which is mainly used for kind of, like, simple platformer.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much, like, clones of Mario games, that kind of thing. So it's really interesting to see a isometric, top-down, like, and it's got visual design in every possible aspect.
Oh man, there's just all these like dead Avas all over the place. And you never really find out what the deal with them is.
No.
But just these giant robot carcasses just everywhere. And they look incredible.
And it kind of tricks you into thinking that there's way more layers of backgrounds going on. Mm. But it doesn't parallax scroll them at all. But your mind kind of thinks they are.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really simple looking game. It's just they picked all the right shapes and colors and put them in the right place.
Yeah, and like I think this was a game that it didn't have any stretch goals on Kickstarter. I think the stretch goals were like, we're going to hire more people and like, you know, test it better. And it feels like that. Like it's a great game.
Yeah, it's not a silly game.
No, it doesn't fuck around, and it does not waste your time.
Yeah.
Did either of you back this?
Yeah, I backed this.
I backed it, yeah.
And I'm proud to have backed this game.
Yeah.
Out of all the games you backed, is this
your favorite? Yeah, number one.
I'm trying to think what else I backed and came out. I would say not only is this like my favorite, this is probably the only thing I've backed that's come out that hasn't been a raging shit show.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It is the opposite of Mighty Number 9.
Yeah, totally.
In every possible way.
I'm really looking forward to seeing where this comes in our Game of the Year discussions.
And I highly recommend afterwards, to go on YouTube and watch all the lore explanation videos. They're real good.
I kind of just want to spend a while just fucking around in the world, because you know the way, like, you can pretty much, there's like collectibles in the game, and they're pretty hard to find, but you need to find them to progress. But you can, I think you can beat the game with half the collectibles.
Yeah, it does the same thing Fez does, where it's got like so many artifacts, but you only need 50% to get to the boss's door.
I'm pretty happy to go back and look for more. And I'm never like that with games, but I really, really like everything about this game.
Yeah.
I spent some time with Bravely Second after Neve's recommendation last week. And that is a really fantastic little RPG. I feel like I have all these problems with RPGs, all this stuff where I'm like, I like RPGs, I like anime, I like, you know, chilled out times with games, but there's all this bullshit. And every time I kind of come up against something like that in Bravely Second, it's like, okay, look, we know you don't want to grind, so now you can play the battles 4 times faster and auto-battle, so you don't even have to press any buttons. And it just does all this shit, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. And then sometimes I'm like, the difficulty here is kind of shitty because I'm over-leveled. And they're like, we'll just change it to hard for this one section. And like, it's fucking cool. Like, there's just... they really, really thought about everything that sucks about JRPGs and are doing their best to kind of combat it.
It's not wasting your time.
Not at all. Like, it's probably the first JRPG ever, you know, that doesn't.
Yeah, because that is definitely a big problem with JRPGs, that you know there's going to be... that in an 80-hour JRPG, about 20 to 30 of that is just you listening to podcasts while you grind.
Yeah. Well, like, there's RPGs I really, really like Skies of Arcadia and Xenoblade.
Yeah.
And I really like them. But when you load them up, you don't know if you're going to get, like, an hour and a half of, like, trying to, like, work your way through some obscure puzzle while, like, you know, you get into random battles, or you're going to get, like, really good cutscenes and a good boss battle. It always just feels like a coin flip. Every time I've turned on Bravely Second so far, I always enjoy my time with it, you know? And, like, a lot of that's down to the good design, and then, like, a lot of it's just, like, it's just such a beautiful, charming little world. Like, the characters are really fun. The story is really fun. It's really weird. Cuchulainn's in it. Cuchulainn's an Irish legend. And they pronounce him wrong. They say he's Cuchulainn. And he's girlfriends with a scary ghost.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, and he's also a minotaur for some reason.
Nice.
Oh, well, yeah, like ancient Greece. Yeah, sure.
But I need this. Like, I'm only like 2 or 3 hours into it. But so far, man, it's great. It's really cool. I really like the job system.
Yeah, the job system's great. Yeah. I'm about 15 hours into the first one. It's really interesting because it's kind of... it's like the best homage to RPGs of a past time. But it plays... like, every aspect you're like, oh, here's the obvious RPG thing. Like, it's about crystals. And anytime you think you're getting into an obvious territory, it really takes a spin on it. Like, there's a self-sacrificing female character in this who's the Vestal. And she's just like, I have to self. And the main character's like, hold up, no you don't. Like, and 3 hours into the game. And like, I mean, you go through all of Final Fantasy X before you get to the hold up, no you don't point. So it was just interesting to see these characters being really fleshed out to this extent really early on in the game.
I'm really, really surprised to see like how much character stuff you get, because it's a lot. Because I remember playing the demo for Bravely Default for the 3DS, and there was no character stuff. It was all gameplay stuff. And that really is like 50% of this game. Like, how's the voice acting in the first
Brilliant.
One?
Brilliant.
The voice so acting in the second one, so good.
Does the game have good kind of set pieces?
Gorgeous. Yes. Everything is beautiful. Yeah,
absolutely.
In it. Yeah.
But like, that you might show up to a town and there's a problem in the town and you're roped into it.
I showed up to a little old man's house because he has to make me a new dress. And I went outside and there was just a fox sitting there. And I clicked on the fox and he was a merchant. But it's just this angry looking fox being like, hey, what do you want? And it's just like this beautiful like creature design and character design that even the stuff that isn't important is really touched with this loving care. Like,
Like say Ryan, like I had to go through like a scary forest, and then once I did, I started getting like attacked by this like weird doll, and had to figure out what the story was there. And then it turns out it's like the doll is like kind of part of one of the bad guys. And then you find out a little bit about the bad guy's story, and then you fight her, and then by beating her, you get her job. You can turn into a wizard now. But then you find that. But then you see her go back to the bad guy of Bravely Second, whose name is Kaiser Oblivion.
Okay.
And it all just, like, the story, gameplay, and progression all tied together in this really satisfying way. And I was only playing for, like, an hour, you know? So, like, it's really nice. It's really, really fun.
Nice.
When it breaks into a random battle, you kind of get a background painting. And the background painting is lit depending on the day, because it has a day-night cycle as well. And the backgrounds are just gorgeous for every, like, once it breaks into a battle, I'm never like, I'm like, wow, that looks so good in every location.
Is there a bestiary in the first one?
I don't think so. Maybe there is. I haven't looked.
So in the second one, there's like, every time you beat an enemy, first of all, you get like a little, this really beautiful little hand-drawn painting of them in your like bestiary. And then if you beat them again, you get a fact about them. And then another little fact, and another little fact. And they're not gameplay stuff. They're just lore stuff about enemies.
That's
so
cool.
Like, I was in a field, and I fought this little apple guy. He was like this little, I don't know how to describe it. He's like a chopped up apple made to look like a human. And he's pretty cute. But after killing a few of them, there's this whole backstory about how there was this, like, apple mage, and he made a bunch of these guys to guard his, like, tower in the forest. But eventually he died, and so now they're all just kind of wandering through that forest. And, like, nothing to do with anything else, but just a really lovely piece of world. You were saying last time, Niamh, about how, like, it is a really good game for world building. Yeah, it's incredible. Like, mm-hmm. And, like, they have that same thing for every weapon in the game. Every weapon in the game has, like, this little backstory. And
that's amazing.
It's deadly.
That isn't in the first game, so it's even nice that they pushed it even further, because I'm so impressed with the first one.
Yeah. Cannot wait to spend more time with it.
I'm really happy for you guys.
Yeah.
Especially because JRPGs can be so cruel sometimes.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I spent a JRPG that, like, got its teeth in me. Dragon Quest VIII for the PS2 was the last one, and I played that, like, last generation, not PlayStation mm-hmm. 2. And that's a good game, but holy shit, it's so slow. It's so fucking slow. It's like the animations take ages. Leveling up takes longer than I've ever seen it in Level Up. Oh, actually, if you finish Bravely Default and you want more JRPG, Dragon Quest IX for the 3DS is excellent.
I saw that. I might pick that up.
Really, really good. Totally different kind of game. Mm-hmm. Way more dependent on gameplay. But, like, you know, it's got Akira Toriyama artwork and everything. It's good stuff. And with that, we are going to move into our Quick Time Events! So who's pumped for Metal Gear Survive? Yeah! Sequel to Game of the Year last year.
I'm really, really interested in a wave-based shooting game.
Yep.
I don't know how they're going to make it work in that engine. Like, that engine's really good for stealth, but not particularly... Like, I never felt really proficient at weapons in it.
Or, like, doing, like, a big kind of wave of enemies. Yeah. Like, with the... Cause,
actually, when I think about it, the worst missions in that game were wave-based enemies.
It's going to be interesting to see, like...
That's the thing. I am so fucking interested to see how this turns out. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, like... One of the main reasons, like, Metal Gear Solid 5 was, like, mine and probably our game of the year last year was just the story behind it and how it tied into the game itself. And, like, even though it's a disaster and it's kind of shitty because, obviously, Kojima isn't involved and it's the first Metal Gear that he's not, I still just want to see this shambling corpse of a game.
Yeah, but this game isn't going to have any clever nods to the fourth wall.
No, it's going to have really stupid ones, I'll bet.
They're zombies, the enemies. They have no heads. They have, like, little beacons coming out of their necks. Yeah. Is that what they are?
They have... Some of them have heads with, like, horns. Like
yeah.
And maybe that's a callback to, you know, that, like, scene from... scene where, like, Snake has, like, the giant horn for 1 second.
Yeah. And these are... So it takes place right after the events of Ground Zeroes, where your mother base was getting attacked, but these guys got sucked into a wormhole, into an alternate timeline, where they are infected people, and you have to, like protect a territory, I guess.
I have no idea. Like, I couldn't draw anything from the trailer, except, like, there's a bunch of weird characters. There's a girl with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Do you play as Big Boss, or...?
No. I don't think Big Boss is in the game.
No.
So it's just a character select. Is it one character or is there multiple?
You know the end of Ground Zeroes?
Yeah.
Where, like, the base gets attacked. Like, the story of this game is literally, like, 5 minutes after that happens, a wormhole opens up and everyone gets sucked in. That's the story of the game.
So it's who is left in the base.
Yeah.
Could be the main character.
Because In the Phantom Pain, there are missions where you have to find wandering soldiers.
Yeah.
And they were original members of Mother Base from 9 years ago that are now wandering the battlefield in a dazed state.
Those missions are so weird.
And some of them, they can run really, really fast. And one of them, like, has, like, an ink cloud, like an octopus or a squid. And you have to, like, keep trying to catch up with them. And I'm wondering, are these the same people that were 9 years in an alternate dimension fighting wave-based zombies?
That's a clever way to tie it back in, but I don't know if they would even bother.
I think that's just me, like, trying to be clever about something that isn't.
Trying to fix the
like,
canon.
I really want to see a big-budget Konami game trying to make sense of this fucking mess. Like, I want to see them put everything into it. I want to see, like, Konami's best people on it, because I'm genuinely interested. I think what we're actually getting is Umbrella Corps Metal Gear Solid version.
Yeah.
Is this a full price game?
No, it's not actually. I think I heard it's 40. So did you hear about this indie game that Sony has been pushing on its store? Solbrain, Night of Darkness.
I don't know if I saw this or not in the story around when I was looking.
It might have been taken down because Sony have... There's this game on the PS Plus store and Sony have been promoting the shit out of it in their YouTube canon or their YouTube channel. It's made up nearly entirely of stolen assets.
And
how do they get to the point where Sony would even...
The weird thing is, this store is like the fourth version of this game. Like, the fourth sequel in this series. And apparently they're all rampant with the stolen items. There's shields from Skyrim. There's character models from Terra Online. It's really bad.
Is it a Western game?
I'm not actually sure.
I'm going to look this up online. I'm real curious. I just want to see some images of it.
Yeah, it's really fucking weird.
Doing some live fact-checking right now.
Yeah, it looks like any game, really.
It looks like any of those kind of, you know, Korean JRPG types.
Yeah, it's a third-person fantasy thing with, like, a fake version of Lightning.
That character...
Oh, whoa, yeah.
That is a character from... That is a illustration of a character that appears in Terra Online.
Sure. But this isn't like a rip-off iPhone game. This is
not a full price, like not $60, but this is like, I think like a $20 to $30 game on PlayStation.
Has it been pulled? Have people complained?
I think so, yeah. But it's just, how did it ever get that far? So then, did you guys see that Battleborn has a new character?
I saw that.
So
it's like a fat guy, isn't it?
I have less to say about the actual character itself, and I just thought the headline of Kotaku was just... It was so perfect. It was Battleborn gets new character, comma, if anyone's interested. Like, what a perfect statement for the state of that game. The character itself is like a little pink bird who talks like Mr. T. It's kind of like a lot of the stuff from Battleborn. It's like, wow, you're really trying hard. Yeah. You know?
It's a mishmash of everything you love.
Yep. All those pop culture references. But yeah, I just thought that was funny. If anyone's interested.
It's so sad. So much work went into that game and it was just destroyed.
It does, but I just feel like there's no coherency to that game at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like especially its kind of visual design and stuff. And like, it just seems like a lot of really, really talented people worked on it and none of them spoke in the same room. So someone tell me about the Resident Evil 7 story leak.
Yeah, got the PEGI rating. Because, like, the game's out in, 4 months?
Yeah.
Jesus, so, really?
So, it's been rated already.
When's it out?
January.
Wow.
And so, as part of the age rating, they have to give out some of the plot points.
And rationales for why they got a rating, like if it has cursing or violence. So they kind of give a little synopsis on the ratings board website. And people found it because that's what gamers do.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the synopsis was, survival horror game in which players assume the role of Ethan, a man searching for his missing wife in a derelict mansion. Contains the word shit and fuck.
Shit, where's my wife? Fuck!
Fuck. This is just Silent Hill 2.
Yeah, it really sounded like Silent Hill 2.
In the Resident Evil 1 mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
I was disappointed. Like, after playing the demo, and I think I was the only one who liked it.
I haven't played it yet.
Okay.
I didn't like it.
You hated it, didn't you, Ryan?
I can't remember it. It just tells a lot of shite.
I thought it was going down this kind of cult in the woods kind of thing.
Yeah, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, something a
Isn't,
bit like that.
That game, you played Last Generation, Brian. Camera, not Last Generation.
What, Outlast?
Outlast. Outlast 2 is what you're looking for.
Well, there's the DLC for Outlast, Whistleblower.
Yeah. You get your dick cut off in first person in that one.
You do?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. But Outlast 2, which isn't out yet, is that exact thing. It's like first person horror in a like American cult in setting.
See, I think that's fascinating. So it's kind of, I was hoping that this is what it would be, that it was like a camera crew that got wound up in this cult. But no, it's Resident Evil.
Do you think this is a zombie mansion?
So,
because I feel like with the kind of stuff they've said, like the messaging about this game, about how they want to take it in a new direction, they have a mansion again, right?
It's a haunted house simulator again, yeah.
But like, you know, is it going to be like, because if there's zombies like there have been in every Resident Evil game, and I include 4 in that, like, then it's just another Resident Evil game, and it's exactly like it used to be. And I don't know enough about the game to say if that's good or bad, but I'm wondering, maybe are they going to take it a different direction, especially like as in enemies, you know?
Hopefully, because if they were going to go, like at the end of the demo, it's a human that grabs you and pulls you back.
Yeah.
Is a Resident Evil a Resident Evil without zombies?
I think at this point you can just fucking make one. And yeah, if it's shitty, then all you have to do is make another one with zombies and people lose their shit. I like the idea of a mansion cult. Like, you know, from the third act of Kill List, Brian.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be really fucking cool. So, have you guys seen how Blizzard have been, like, teasing the character Sombra in Overwatch for ages? And have you seen the recent fan reaction?
The reality game?
Blizzard are operating... AR games, right? Yeah, an ARG to find out the new character. But the thing is, it's kind of like the sort of ARG where there's, like, a really obscure puzzle, and then you solve that and go to another website where there's a timer, and then the timer reaches 0 and nothing happens, and eventually people crack it and it goes to another timer, and players are getting so pissed, and all the Steam reviews of Overwatch lately are like, you guys are really bad at ARGs, and people are just like, this sucks, stop it.
It doesn't seem to be a true ARG where you could literally figure out the answer with hard work from the moment they brought it out.
Like they're doing it in chunks.
It's all gated.
Timed pieces. Yeah, gated of a puzzle. And they're never anything meaty enough to keep people going. For the extent of what they have to find. Like there's code in a like swoosh of tracer's light in a video that they have to stop and like gather all this information for. And then it all just accumulates in a percentage counter.
Yeah.
That they can't get past 5. So people are pretty annoyed. But everyone kind of noticed with Blizzard, they do monthly releases for all their cool stuff. So I'd say at the end of this month, we're getting Bastion's level.
Yeah.
So maybe next month, we'll get Sombra.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't rolled out new characters sooner.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess they know they can take their time with it.
It's weird because Sonic Team actually did a big ARG that no one talked about, because I don't think anyone cared, for Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
The release date. They released... It was really stupid. It was like, they released all these screenshots. Well, not screenshots, but like pieces of kind of promotional artwork. And within the artwork, there were like numbers. And if you put all the numbers together, you get a date. And that date was the day they had that now infamous like live stream.
Oh, okay.
But it was really half-hearted.
I didn't even know they had an ARG.
But this was a video debunking it. Or not debunking it, but just like going through all the evidence and analyzing it. But it was on the Sega YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Sega kind of had to crack their own ARG after the fact.
That's because sad. There wasn't a community interested in it.
No.
Have any of you guys been involved in an ARG before?
I've read about The Binding of Isaac when they... like a few months ago when Ed McMillan released like extra weapons and DLC for it. He did a lot of that in real life where...
He did it really clever.
Yeah, he hid stuff in bins and buried stuff out in deserts. And I'd say there was like 20 hardcore fans out there that like met up in real life and found all the clues.
I think the final step was you had to go to a phone booth and dial a certain number. And as soon as that happened, like, you know, Ed McMillan flipped a switch and the game updated for everyone.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like stuff like that's really cool. But I think you know, ARGs are kind of getting more popular. If anyone doesn't know, that's like an augmented reality game, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, there's all these clues, and a lot of the time it involves going to the world and, like, you know, going to a particular location, finding code, putting that into a server, all this kind of stuff. And I think, like, you know, it's starting to gain steam as, like, a legitimate marketing tool. But, you know, you're having all these cases, like with Blizzard and with Sega, where they just don't know how to use it at all.
I was involved in a really big one a few years back.
Really?
It was for the Nine Inch Nails release of Year Zero.
Oh, that's a really famous one, yeah.
Yeah, it was on a flash drive last summer, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, at gigs there was flash drives left in the toilets and stuff. But if you were part of the forums at the time, all users were involved. And they were also doing, like, it was a fake resistance. It was called Art is Resistance. So you had to create art for it. So I did a piece for it, and it was published in a paper in Texas somewhere.
Weird.
Really weird. It was really cool. But at the end, it was like, it showed all the forum members' activity, if you were captured, if you were deceased, and, like, if you were just murdered. So it was really interesting.
What were you, Niamh?
I was uncaptured, but unknown, so... It was good, but it was a really good time, and it was really fun. Yeah. A really good game.
That channel we talk about every now and then, Nightmind, that is a big ARG channel. And actually, he recently set up a Patreon, and if he gets past a certain point in his Patreon, I think it's like $800 a month, he's going to donate the rest of his money to set it, to helping people set up ARGs.
That's pretty cool. That's really fun.
Nightmind's a cool guy.
Because it is a nice idea for community, because... It has that perfect blend of staying indoors, but also going out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, it's kind of a fun, weird conspiracy thing. Like, I know there's one ongoing right now. I'm going to butcher the name of this, but I think a year or two ago at one of the PAXs, there was this booth that was empty. And I think the name of the game was Killscreen. And all you could do was put in your information into it, and it would play, like, this really weird video of, like, a bloody eyeball or something. And then it was linked to a Twitter account, and the Twitter account doesn't respond unless you give it very specific commands, and then it'll start responding. And people have started to realize that depending on what it likes or doesn't like, it's actually kind of communicating in a weird way, and no one knows what it's about, but it's going to be a fun one to watch. If I can find the story behind that, I'll link that in the show notes, because it's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Next up, we have...
We have the PS4 Slim leak. So, which one of us was saying? It was you, Niamh, wasn't it?
Yeah, so this originally, how this all happened is pictures of this new Slim PS4 appeared on Gumtree in Manchester.
Gumtree, for anyone who doesn't know, is kind of like Craigslist, but it's a UK and Ireland version of it.
And this guy was selling the supposed PlayStation 4 Slim, and a guy bought it. Loaded a few more pictures, and Eurogamer verified the information by going to his house, putting it on, and yeah.
I just fucking love that they went to his house.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, okay, asshole, let's see. Let's fucking see.
They were like, where's a nice place in your house where you can take some better photos?
Yeah, it's always grainy, shitty photos of these things.
Yeah. So another one appeared in the wild. So there's an unboxing video up.
Really? I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, originally Eurogamer did their own little video from the guy's console that they went to verify. But they got a cease and desist from Sony. Because Sony has a conference coming up on the 7th of September where they're expected to announce the Slim as well as the new Neo, which is the updated one. But... a few more of these PS4 Slims have found their way into the wild, and a girl got one, and she uploaded a unboxing video, and we've got a few more details on it, which I will let you know now. You get a new controller, so that's the biggest thing.
Oh, wow.
The biggest difference between this controller is the light bar on the front now has a strip on the top.
Yeah, it like bleeds over onto the touchpad.
Right.
So that you can check what color you are by looking at the controller right away.
Because some games, the color is different for specific reasons.
Right, for player one or player two.
Yeah. And sometimes I've had to check the color, and then you turn it over and then this big bright light hits you in the face.
Yeah,
and you're like,
yeah.
Nah. So I guess, yeah, reasonable addition. There's no optical port.
A optical port is for an optical cable, which is a subwoofer soundbar.
Okay.
I have one of those, but I plug it into the television.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of people just plug it into television.
Yeah, there's no need for it.
Because the sound goes through the HDMI anyway. Like, I know some people, they just want, like, to be 100% sure they hear every single, like, bullet clip fall on the floor, I guess.
Yeah.
Bullet shell. So they like to have the sound outputted through their PS4, but that's crazy.
So, no optical port, a slot for easy hard drive replacement, which is cool.
Yeah.
Labeled power and eject buttons, which are physical buttons.
Yeah. I hate the way the buttons are now.
Yeah, the touch ones.
The ones on the launch PS4 are awful.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. On my Metal Gear Phantom Pain PS4, they're buttons, and it's way nicer.
That's way nicer. That's a really nice PS4.
And the design itself, it's all matte. It seems to be not much smaller, maybe about 20-30% smaller, with rounded corners. It looks nice, but the PS4 itself is a nice console. Like, the PS4 is the nicest, for me, it's the slickest looking console going anyway. Like, yeah. I like the Xbox S as well. So it's not much smaller. It doesn't have 4K output like the updated Xbox S has.
Yeah.
So it is just really a slim version of the PS4.
Yeah.
And I think it's just to have it on, they usually do a slim version, and it's to have it on market when the Neo goes on sale as well.
I mean, like, they've done so many of these kind of consoles over the years. Did they do one for the PS3? I don't think they did.
Yeah, they did.
They had a PS3, and then they had a Super Slim.
They've done so many of these over the years, like, they know what they're doing. They know exactly how much of this they're going to sell. Like, it might not be for me, but it's still going
to
sell.
It's 3 years into a console's life cycle. They have to do a revised slim version. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is.
Do you know, I probably will pick up a Scorpio when they do one. Yeah. Or, wait... Not a Scorpio, Neo.
Yeah,
yeah, as well, because like at that point you've got a PS4 with no warranty, and you may as well just flip it.
Yeah, I got my PS4 secondhand. Like, friend working at GameStop, so I can get you a cheap one, which is awesome. But I always get nervous that I don't have a warranty for it, so I might trade it in, get a Neo.
I feel like my one when I was playing Deus Ex, it sounded like it wanted to take off. It was very noisy.
Yeah.
And very warm.
Yeah.
So the Neo will be probably announced on the 7th of September. I wonder if they'll keep the original look of the PlayStation 4, or is that gone now? That
would be a strange one, I think, to have a PS4 Slim and then revert to the original look for the new, more powerful model. Like, even a different paint job or something, you know?
It'll be interesting to see what it'll look like and if it'll match more the Slim version with the more matte look, because the PS4 has a matte slash...
Yeah.
Sheen.
The way the buttons are done on the Slim, they're kind of graved in. They're kind of like sticking out as well. Mm. So they're kind of like, I guess the way I kind of describe them is they kind of look very organic.
Yeah.
As part of a texture on top of the piece of equipment. So I'd say it might have that kind of finish to it as well, where they don't really kind of look like buttons, but they just kind of look like body parts.
Yeah. And did you guys see that Nintendo were after announcing that there's a Nintendo Direct on Thursday?
Yeah, for the 3DS.
So no NX news.
No NX yet.
Yeah.
It's like they keep going on about not wanting to cause confusion. And we're getting closer and closer to D-Day for the NX, and no one knows what it is, what it looks like.
Do you remember last year when they're like, we're not going to talk about the NX until 2016. We are 3/4 of the way through 2016.
Yeah.
But anyway.
This is for release dates for the new Yo-Kai Watch game.
Yeah, totally.
Bit more info on Pokemon Sun and Moon and some other stuff.
Some of those new Pokemon look like trash. I don't care who I offend. They look like fucking dog shit.
I really like the new Meowth.
I don't like him.
It's just a fucking Meowth with its tail turned the other way. What's wrong with everyone?
He's a little bit sassier.
Meowth already has.
He's got so much sass, Neve. Yeah. So much.
He's a little sassier.
And it's like, oh, look, it's a Vulpix and it's blue. Awesome. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, most of these Pokemon I could fucking make in Photoshop with just the use of the hue saturation.
Yeah, but now you get to have them in the game. Yeah, like, some of them designs
That Raichu, that thing's looks like shit. And I got fucking shit. I lost, like, a bunch of followers when I gave about this on Twitter. Like... That Raichu looks like dog shit. I'm sorry, everyone. I am sorry to be the harbinger of reality. It looks terrible. Look into its dead little eyes and tell me I'm wrong.
What do you think of the new executor
The big tall one.
Yeah, palm tree.
I don't know. People like it. I don't understand. It's like a fucking... Hey, we took the tree Pokemon and we made it a tree.
For a
And it's a dragon? What?
Dragon type? Sure. I really, really hate Exeggutor and Exeggutor. Like, even his episode in Pokemon was shit.
That is actually the worst episode.
Yeah, like, he fucking sucks. So I'm kind of glad it was a meme for July to have that fucking thing going on.
It's like, you know that shitty vendor at all the Irish cons who sells all the bootleg Dragon Ball Z toys? I feel like an executive walks by them selling Pokemon toys and was like, wait a minute, fucking Blue Sandshrew, everybody! And everyone's, like, really pumped over it.
Okay, I will say the Sandshrew probably has the better redesign out of all of them, because he looks like an igloo now.
Yeah, that is cool, but Sandshrew has always been cool as shit.
That is true.
So, you know, you can't ruin a Sandshrew.
I like
can ruin
sandcastle.
A fucking Raichu.
Do you like the Sandcastle Pokemon?
Yeah.
I like the idea that other Pokemon walk on it and get eaten.
Yeah.
That's horrifying. But...
Are any of you going to get this game?
No.
I don't want to say.
Jesus. John's a maybe. Strong
I don't know.
Maybe.
I really didn't like X and Y. But every time a new Pokemon comes around, and I know it's because it's happened like 6 times in a row, I'm always like, nah, man, not for John, not anymore. And then it's 2 weeks before release, and I'm like, let's just watch a compilation video of these new Pokemon. And then I'm like, oh, that one's wearing a judo uniform.
Yeah, same.
Yep.
My girlfriend had to do an art commission of a bat Pokemon. And I was like, so like Golbat or something? And she was like, no, it's like kind of like a bat with like fluffy ears. And she showed me the Pokemon and I'd never seen it in my life.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them like that.
And that's never happened to me before. Like usually I have enough knowledge to know that's an official registered Pokedex Pokemon. And not like someone's fan art of like what could be a Pokemon someday.
That happened to me for the first time in Black and White when there was this Pokemon and it's like a giant like Easter Island looking face with a big mustache.
Oh, Nosepass.
Nosepass. You ever seen Nosepass,
yeah.
Dave? Yeah. And it just came up and I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It looked like one of those bootleg Pokemon characters. Like, you know, when you go to on holidays to, like, to a Spanish island and they have a bootleg Pokemon cartridge. And that's what the Pokemon in the game look like.
Yeah, it's like a photoshopped Dennis the Menace head. And they're like, look at this new Pokemon.
Yeah, like, here's Calvin and Hobbes. They're in the game.
But have you seen, like,
here's
there's this Pokemon and it's like a circular rock that floats in the air for this game?
Geodude?
It's not Geodude, no. It doesn't have a face. And it was really fun. Announced that with like all the fucking blue Vulpixes and shit, and no one talked about it because it's the most forgettable Pokemon.
It's just another Venonat.
It's worse than Venonat. Okay. At least we can make fun of Venonat.
Because the bat Pokemon my girlfriend showed me, I was like, that looks fucking class. But it could have just been like a Digimon, or it could have just been its own thing from its own anime. Like,
yeah, totally.
It didn't need. It was so...
It could have been the mascot character of any anime.
But,
that's what I feel that's better about the design for this game, is like, I think with the last generation, they went a bit crazy, they made the garbage Pokemon, the ice cream
Trubbish
Pokemon.
Is great.
I like Trubbish.
The ice cream Pokemon's deadly. I had one, it was called John Jr.
Yeah, Frostlass is cool.
Like, they look fine, but they don't seem iconically, like, Pokemon, you know?
Yeah, there's a kind of coherency lost.
Yeah, but where I feel like the ones that they're releasing now, and even... like the new ones and the kind of redesigns of the older ones, they seem to be going down a more kind of simpler, kind of more iconic shapes.
I guess
them.
So, yeah.
And the fact that they're kind of Hawaiian Island vacation themed definitely helps.
So it's like they're looking less like crazy Digimon and more kind of simpler, cleaner Pokemon.
That fucking Infernape, that thing's a Digimon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, like, that's just a Digimon. But yeah. I don't know, I'll probably complain about it till it comes out and then buy it. I don't know.
Like, maybe isn't Blaziken in Digimon?
Probably, yeah.
Probably.
I think Blaziken appears in Digimon. Like, it's basically the same fucking thing.
The day it comes out, I'll walk to the shop and I'll get angry that I'm buying another Pokemon and I'll buy Yo-Kai Watch 2. Fuck this.
Please do. I really hope Yo-Kai Watch 2 comes out here.
Yeah.
This Christmas.
So the last item on our docket, and I thought, hell, let's make this our final form. We'll be right back. If I remember our last podcast correctly, No Man's Sky had just come out and was being surprisingly well received. I know that might seem like a long time ago now, but do you remember that? Like, it was getting quite a lot of praise in its kind of first couple of days.
Yeah, and I think when we were talking about it, we're like, I don't know why it's getting, like we kind of felt the haters were being a bit crazy with their hate.
Yeah.
I've now completely done a 180 on that.
What a difference 2 weeks make, because this game has been lynched, like so much of the support that was for it, so violently against it. And what's the name of the guy? Sean Murray?
Sean Murray, yeah.
He has become like Peter Molyneux Jr. would be a good way to describe him.
A liar.
And I'm not saying like that's what I think of him. I'm saying that's how the internet sees him, you know?
There's so many videos of like just all the interviews of him giving all the facts. Yeah. And then like Big X is going, not in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I could understand if a lot of them were years ago, a lot of them were like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know? So what is your take on, was it hype or was it broken promises?
I think it's both.
I've said for years about this game that I don't think this game is going to be what people think. Like, I've said it on this podcast 1,000 times. I didn't think, from the things they were saying, their production resources, from everything, I think you look at this game, you knew what it was, and you knew what it was because this shit happens over and over and over in the games industry. Mm-hmm. I've seen this 100 times. I've seen it with Black and White. I've seen it with Too Human. I've seen it like 1,000 times. And so, yes, I totally think Sean Murray deserves some of the blame. He overhyped it. He was I'm not going to say he lied because I don't know the specifics of it, but he was disingenuous what he said was in the game. But I just don't get how professional game journalists looked at this game, looked at the resources, and were like, this is what this game is going to be. Like, I can understand people believing them because they're games journalists, but I do feel a lot of it lies in the fault of how this game was spoken about. And like, especially like people fucking jacking off over the number 7 quintillion planets or whatever. Like, break it down. Like, that's not hard. Like, right now, I could go to 3D Max and I could scale up a cube to the point that it is bigger than any game in existence and be like, look everyone, I've created the biggest game ever. But I haven't. It's just a cube scaled up. There's no context points. And that's what this fucking game did. And I've been saying it for months that that's what this game did. And now people are upset, you know?
Yeah, it was like, it's interesting to see games journalists kind of backpedal a little and be like, oh, it's hype culture. It's like, you're the guys who came out of...
You're the hype culture.
Yeah, you came out of you're all these showings it. Being like, holy shit, No Man's Sky, the dream game. And there was never anything there to support that in the first place. So I feel like, yeah, it was hyped to the extreme. And I don't think the games media are really taking kind of... They should be taking ownage of that. But they're really ready to throw Sean Murray under the bus a little.
Yeah, and like, I think plenty of blame goes to that guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, same.
But like, I mean...
But like,
we've all been through this shit enough times to know that, you know, it's not going to be it, you know?
I think the easiest way to know this was never going to be the dream game that they were always selling it to be was that dream game doesn't exist. If someone could already make that game, it would be made. Like, you know...
By a rich company.
Yeah. That, like, not a team of 8 people. And it also says something for procedural generated games. So a lot of people are saying, the planets are all the same. I was like, yeah, that's what procedurally generated is. Yeah. They have a bunch of assets and they cycle through them. That's
like,
it.
I saw people being like, you know, every planet's going to have like its own ecosystem and stuff. And it's like, I'm pretty computing power does not exist to do that. And it's like a Binding of Isaac. I'd never say with Binding of Isaac, every room is just totally different, man. It's like, I've seen a bunch of the same rooms and there's like millions of rooms in Binding of Isaac. I've just played it a ton. But of course that was going to happen, you know?
There'll be slight variations on things. What I will say is, like, we also saw the Reddit post where they kind of catalogued all the lies or all the expected content that was in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is one egregious lie for me that Sean Murray told, and it's especially egregious in the way he said it. So he was talking about skyboxes, and he was like, if you look up in the sky in a game, that's a skybox. That's a painted background that someone painted there. And he was kind of scoffing at this. He was like, our game doesn't have skyboxes, because our game has its own gravity. It's like, it has not only its own gravity, it has its own physics. It's like the planets are rotating.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their an actual day-night cycle, not a day-night cycle that is a background pushed from day to night behind the thing and lighting change. He said, we're generating real lighting as it really changes from day to night. Obviously, in the finished product, that's not there.
No.
So the implications of that was, the closer you get to the sun, the more desert planets you would get, the hotter it would be, and the more like volatile they would be. That is not there. Like, that's a lot of gameplay promises he did make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a planet rotating on its own axis is not in the game. Yeah. There is skyboxes in the game.
And it will go from day to night and back to day again. And that's just because we're orbiting around a sun, like a real sun. So that's kind of cool. It's, you know, normally we would be in a level designed by artists.
You see this shit again and again. Like, I remember with the Dark Souls 2 trailer and the Watch Dogs trailer, like, the lighting was different. And, like, the lighting is way better in those trailers. Look, I don't begrudge them for that. Making games is fucking hard. I totally understand that shit gets lost in optimization. And I don't think anyone is sensibly going to be like, okay, we're going to play down the graphics for our trailer because in case it doesn't end up like that, because they want to build hype and stuff. That's a league apart from what happened here.
The clips I've seen of it, all the planets to me are, it's a red planet with green and orange or green and blue plants, and it has an orange gradient on the red ground and like very, very bright blue water.
Hmm.
And the shittest looking spore creatures.
Yeah.
As the wildlife.
And, like, I suspect this is probably an interesting game. Like, this game is probably pretty interesting. If you separate the game from the hype, I bet it would be a curious experience. I don't think it would be an especially good game. Nothing I've seen to me implies that it's going to be, like, really, really engaging or anything like that. But I bet it would be the kind of thing... It'd be like a Blues and Bullets thing with Uni, where you download it and you're like, oh, this is interesting, you know.
Keep in mind, Blues and Bullet was €5.
€5. This is,
they are looking for €60,
and they delivered everything. That is kind of the shocking thing, because that's the complete counter argument to people being like, well, look, it was only made by 8 people. They're charging $60 for it. I don't give a shit how many people it was made by.
And it's like, this was a game where we never saw gameplay footage. Like, people kept asking, "What do you do in the world? Oh, you explore." How do you explore? Like, it's first person. Like, do you have guns? And these kind of obvious gameplay aspects of how you explore a game were never answered. And it's just a resource collecting game. And even then, it's not a very in-depth resource collecting game.
It does sound like that maybe the concept of the game was most of the production cycle, the planetary thing, and they saw how far they could push that.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they did that, they kind of bolted on the gameplay. Which is, that's not how you make a good game.
No, but to be honest, I don't think procedurally generated makes a good game. I think, like, maybe, okay, Binding of Isaac is kind of a different case, but when you're talking about exploration and world, I think procedurally generated works completely against the idea of world design.
See, the funny thing is there, like, I've mentioned this game before, but, like, this space game FTL is procedurally generated, and... But what that has, like, you know, it's procedurally generated each different run you do. And a run is designed to last an hour. Like, you can beat that game in an hour. It's just very difficult. And that has, like, a load of different races, a load of different situations. And it's not so much procedurally designing the universe as it is designing, like, the weird story you go on that time. So the first time I ever played FTL, I ended up completely stranded in space with just, like... a space dog, and all the rest of my crew were dead, just me and a space dog floating aimlessly in space. And that was cool. Shit like that can't happen in No Man's Sky, because like, it's not
there are, like, selection of tools is way too limited.
Exactly. And it has to be because of the scope of their game. Yeah, you know,
it's like a board game with only a few pieces, and it's like a tiny, it's like a basic version of Mousetrap as opposed to like a really crazy version of Mousetrap.
And they never want to mess you up too much, so there's limited resources that you need to fly off a planet.
Mm.
So those resources are always available on every planet you get. So there's never that moment of, oh man, I'm stuck. Because they can't do that, because what happens if your starting planet is the one that you're...
Exactly.
Oh, man, I'm stuck.
Yeah, and then it's bad game design. So, like, they have to have a solution to that problem always. So there isn't a risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you see the blame here, Brian?
A fraction of it's on Sony's hype.
Oh, so, I say more than a fraction.
I think most of it goes to Sean Murray and and Let's Players and journalists.
Yeah.
People, I see a lot of people being like, oh, don't be pissy at Hello Games. It's just like,
no.
The guy was out there.
No.
Like, on talk shows. Like,
the talk shows is what
Stephen
really
Colbert.
Pisses me off,
yeah.
Because that's him directly communicating to people who do not know better.
Yeah.
Like, you can't blame the average person for not knowing this shit. You can't blame them. They don't give a shit about games. They shouldn't have to, you know?
But, like, he's straight up, like, is lying and things. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not even he won't lie. He'll deflect a question.
Yes.
Like, someone will be like, can you see, like, interact with other players? And he's like, yeah. He'll never give to the what extent. He'll never say
He says this thing like, you won't be able to know what you look like, but other players. That seemed like such a weird design decision to me that I was like, well, I didn't think it at the time, but looking back at that interview, I was like, it sounds like he just made that up.
Do we ever get to see ourselves?
No, you don't see yourself, so the only way for you to know what you look like is for somebody else to, you know, to see you.
Can you run into other people, other players on the game?
Yes, but the chances of that are incredibly rare, just because of the size of what we're building.
Wow.
Like, I think so many people wanted it to be so many things, and instead of being like, no, it is X, Y, and Z, instead of doing that, because it would take away, like, from people's hype, I guess, he decided to play coy a little with the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what you do with gamers.
No.
And with people who are giving over €60 for your product.
And especially when you say, like, this game is limitless. Like, I guarantee at least 10% of the people who bought that game on launch were like, oh, we'll see how fucking limitless this is, you know?
30 to 50
hours, people
that
just want
to
dig all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
He just said, I really wish he just said it's Minecraft in space.
But it's not even. People would be happy if it was Minecraft in space. Some guy decided, I'm going to dig down into the earth and see how far I can dig.
Oh, yeah,
he set up a big like vlog event for it, didn't he?
Yeah, and it was just like, this is going to be cool. We're going to just see what this is like. And like 5 minutes in, he was like, oh, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like miles wide, inches deep kind of thing.
Totally.
It's really disappointing.
It's interesting because I think at some point recently we talked about the possibility of this maybe being on our game of the year because it was such a significant thing. I don't really have too much interest in playing it, but from the sounds of it, this is going to be a candidate for biggest shit show of the year.
Yeah.
And that's not even making like a statement on the quality of the game because we don't know. We haven't played it.
Yeah. I think it would have been better if you just compared it to games that were already out there because then people could have put their expectations in check.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of all the Molyneux shit.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that's even looking like even his cadence and Molyneux are so similar in interviews because they'll try and deflect to points and then get really passionate about what they're deflecting to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's the exact same bait and switch.
Did you guys see that Kotaku article today on the GTA 5 community that are trying to blow up a dam?
Yeah.
That kind of made me think of this because
I didn't hear about this.
All right. In GTA 5, there's a reservoir with a big dam kind of up in the valleys.
Mm.
And behind the dam is like a very, very, very deep reservoir that's trickling out a tiny stream that goes into Los Santos. And there's a bunch of people online, just a bunch of Let's Players who are all kind of around the same goal of trying to blow up the dam because some of the walls in GTA can get destroyed by cars and some of the buildings can. But these are kind of sheds and tiny walls. But for some reason, people kind of got the idea in their head because it's Rockstar that maybe you can like destroy this dam and then you can flood Los Santos. And I know.
That sounds really complicated.
Now, let's compare Rockstar to it's Hello Games, is that what they're called? Like, if Rockstar can't do this fucking feat, why the fuck do you think an 8-person studio can do
a world for you to be lost in forever.
Like, you really have to.
The last game you'll ever need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how you have these romantic fantasies of like a game in your head, and you're just like, there's it's completely limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no. what are games that broke your? What's the game that broke your heart over the years?
For what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I've got one. Before Pokemon Red and Blue came out, a kid told me that you could get your Charmander and set a building on fire, and then the fire engine would show up, and a Blastoise would put out the fire, and they'd give out to you. And I thought, that's amazing. Why the fuck would that be in the game? And I was so disappointed because I was 9.
For me, it was Black and White. I think I've said this before, but it was this god sent by Peter Molyneux, and like, he had all these fucking interviews, all these magical interviews about this game, and the whole thing is you had this like pet, like a bipedal lion who'd like walk around, and he'd even say things in the interviews like, I mean, the pets are even doing things that we never programmed them to do. I saw one staring at the sunset the other end. Like, you know, I wanted that game to be good, and I wanted that game to be good, and I came out and I bought it and I played the shit out of it and I loved it for years and years and years. And then when I was about 15, I broke and I was like, that game was shit, it was a bad game, and I'm not pretending it was good anymore.
I love that game, but I you just
haven't broke yet, Niamh. You just give it a few more years.
I never knew it was hyped.
You'll snap.
Yeah. What about you, Niamh? You got anything?
No, I don't think so. I'm very...
Like, you always have your expectations in check.
Yeah, well, my expectations are low for everything, and then it's up to the piece of media to correct me.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like, has there ever been, like, a JRPG where you're like, this is it, I'm in love with all of them?
And I was really excited for 13, and...
You defended 13 well into its release.
I really like 13, and I bought 13-2, and 13-2 is not only the worst Final Fantasy game I've ever played, but possibly the worst game I have ever played.
And then, Eve, you haven't played Lightning Returns.
I think that would be better. I hate that little Noel shit. I hate him so much.
Oh, it's fucking Noel and, like, the tiny, skinny Lightning. Yeah. She's awful. Her design is so terrible.
It's like, hey, you know the good character you like playing? Well, you're not playing her in this one.
Her and Snow make me really uncomfortable. That is some fucking Lolita bullshit right there.
Wait, no. Tekken 4.
Okay.
I was really disappointed with that.
Tekken 4 was like the next-gen Tekken for PS3.
Okay.
And Xbox.
People give Tekken 4 way harder a time than it deserves. That is a good game.
It's not a bad game, but I think, like, they were like, you can break through stuff, and...
I think the thing with Tekken 4, the gameplay stuff wasn't great. Mm-hmm. I fucking love how they presented the story of that game. Do you remember the cutscenes? And have that guy, and his voice was like, Bravery entered the Tekken tournament. And it was so good! It was fucking incredible!
Why is he so angry?
I read once that... It was like that the Mishima Zaibatsu had killed his family and were now forcing him to, like, do narration for their game. And that's how it sounds, because he's like, Jin Kazama entered the Tekken tournament. And it's so good. It's so... And, like, the soundtrack of that game is incredible as well.
Refunds for No Man's
Sky. Shit. Yeah, no, let's get into this.
So, people want their money back.
Like, when I read the story of this, all I could think was, like, if you want your refunds... Then you must answer me these riddles 3. So, what it was like, someone wanted a refund for No Man's Sky because he was unhappy about how the game came out, which is, you know, its own conversation. But then they told him that he could get his refund, but if he did, he would never have the ability to purchase No Man's Sky ever, ever again. And he backed down.
Was that on PlayStation?
I think so, yeah.
PlayStation had to clarify and was like, this isn't true.
Yeah, because so like, he could just buy the game at GameStop, and there's no way that they could block just that PS4 to play a disc bait. No, that's stupid.
So this went into overdrive over the weekend because there was a NeoGAF thread about how to get your refund. Steam has this policy where you can get a refund if you've played less than 2 hours and you've bought it, like you've asked for a refund within a 48-hour window.
Mm.
So people are saying... You can go past this for No Man's Sky, and if you cite the marketing campaign compared to the final product. So a lot of people tried this, and a lot of people did get refunds. But I think the one specifically was a guy who clocked up 50 hours and managed to get a refund. I don't know who it was, but they claimed that if you play 50 hours of a game and you ask for a refund, you're a thief. I think that's a true statement, because 50 hours of a game suggests you like the game enough.
At that point, you've edited and digested it.
Yeah,
and
then you want a free meal.
You're a moron.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you know, for all the shit we talked about them, like, they're fucking a game development studio. Like, you can't.
It's got a 39% positive.
Jesus. I, like, fucking two, it was 2 weeks ago mm-hmm. that we did this podcast, and we're like, man, people are really into No Man's Sky. Like, it's so hard to believe now, but, like, it's crazy. Like, and that is going to do it for our final form. And so we are going to move into our loot drop segment.
Britney has a new album.
Okay, I was going to go
it's
ahead.
It's beautiful.
Danny.
She's back.
So it's on Spotify. Go check it out.
It's Britney, bitch.
It's Britney Birch. That's cool she's doing alright, because...
I don't think she's doing alright.
But you know, for a while she was an American Idol judge.
Yeah.
And that's like, no, that's television.
Does her dad still own her?
I think she's a happier, freer person now.
Crystal Castle's album out called Amnesty.
Some good shit. and
it doesn't have Alice Glass anymore, but it has like
it nearly does. Like,
it's got a different girl on vocals again.
But she's screaming in all the right ways.
Yeah. Like, I think Ethan, the producer, has like pretty much like copied over the same screechy tone.
Okay, look. There's a new wrestler called Bobby Roode, and his theme song is called Glorious Domination. And I swear to God, it's the best wrestling theme song that's ever existed, and I want it to play whenever I walk into any room. That's not going to happen, but I'm going to leave it in the show notes so people can just...
Well, do you want us to use that song for the end credits?
Yeah, we'll finish it out.
Are you going to bait and switch me, Niamh?
No, I will. No,
fuck it, let's do it. Happy birthday, John.
I played Aqua for Brian.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll end on the right... Okay.
Niamh's sound, she won't hurt you.
Niamh hurts me more than any of my friends. She's so mean. So my loot drop is going... Brian, you remember that story you were telling about the dam?
Yeah.
I read about this super fucking weird, interesting case that happened in the online game EverQuest.
This is also a Kotaku article about a specific thing in a game.
Yep.
Okay.
And what it follows is that there's this boss in EverQuest called the Sleeper. And it's this giant invincible dragon that you can't kill. And you can't kill it because it's a story event. You're meant to wake up the Sleeper... And it storms through the land and, like, destroys everything and kills everyone. And that triggers, like, the next major plot in the, like, game's world. So there's all these servers and people have tried to kill the Sleeper a bunch of times. Like, a load of different times. And it's impossible. Its stats are just, like, way too high. And this was years ago. But there was this one server. Well, the three main guilds of that server made a deal that they were never going to awaken the Sleeper. Because if they did, what happens is you lose access to another boss fight, and the other boss fight has really rare drops. So it was agreed by, like, three major guilds that we're never going to do that, we're always just going to keep the world in this, like, isolated version. Until a fourth guild emerged.
Oh!
And this fourth guild made it clear that it wanted to destroy the server by unleashing the Sleeper, okay? This is all in the Kotaku article. And so they did that. They, before anyone could stop them, and there was like a barricade set up by all the other guilds to try and stop them because they wanted this server to remain the way it was. This isn't a game plot. This is all like real people trying to do something. But they failed. They snuck in and one of them managed to get through and activated the Sleeper. And so the Sleeper came out and attacked everyone. But the thing is, this had been years after anyone ever tried the Sleeper, and this was such a serious server that everyone's character was min-maxed. And so what happened was this giant battle between the Sleeper and 200 of the server's best players. And slowly, after like a 20-hour fight, they realized they had taken off about 25% of the health. And slowly they were like, oh my god, we're gonna do it. We're going to beat the Sleeper.
For 20 hours?
Yeah. Huge, huge fight. And so, finally, they get the Sleeper down to 25% health. You know what happens? It despawns.
What?
It falls out of the game's world. And no one can figure out what happened. No cutscene, no explanation, no nothing.
And has the server been ruined now? Has the other boss disappeared?
This is where things start to get weird. After some investigating... The order to despawn the Sleeper came not even from the EverQuest development team, but from one of the heads of Sony itself. What? I'm going to leave the story there. A link to the article. Go check it out.
EverQuest is so weird.
EverQuest is so weird.
Because, like, it's like Warcraft, but, like, really, really angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were fighting that, like,
maybe I'm exaggerating that. It was a long, long fucking time,
I can imagine
though.
It being that
yeah,
long.
Yeah, it just sounds like a long, disgusting mm-hmm. battle.
I spent, like, 5 hours fighting a dragon in Final Fantasy XII once. It was awesome.
I'm going to link a documentary. Well, it's a documentary series by Vice. I think it's called Badlands. It's from, like, the same kind of series as the Ellen Page one.
Gaycation?
Yeah. But this one has Michael K. Williams, who played Omar in The Wire.
Oh, cool.
And it's just him just doing drug culture. And I'll link a YouTube episode, but it's the one on Texas Tea. And so this is another thing me and my girlfriend have been talking about the last 2 weeks where we keep kind of joking about this drink, and then we found that there's a documentary on this drink. And it's got a bunch of different names. It's called Texas Tea. It's called Lean. It's called Drank. It's called The Player's Potion.
Lean is a good name.
It is a mixture of, grape soda and cough syrup.
Jesus.
And the cough syrup has codeine in it, which is an opiate. So it gives you a very mellow high. But this cough syrup costs like $1,000 now. And you have to get it from either Canada or Mexico. And people like Soulja Boy are on it. I think Lil Wayne was on it for a while. Justin Bieber takes this stuff. And, like, it's not illegal, but it's a very gray line. And the way you drink it is, you can drink it with Sprite. And some guys will just, like, come in with, like, a 2-liter bottle of Sprite. And they'll just, like, pour it in. And it blends like a lava lamp. And they're like, check out the flow. And then they'll just drink that for like the whole evening, and you just watch it and you get chest pains. It's fucking disgusting, and it's like the sweetest thing ever. So like think of like Calpol, but it's like it's so good but it's so bad for you. And you put like throat lozenges in it as well, or ice cubes.
Is the whole documentary about this drink?
Yeah.
Weird.
And people in Texas, where it's originally from, drink it there. And they all seem like pretty chill dudes. But then there's a community in LA that do it, and they're all wearing masks. And they're very, very aggressive.
What kind of masks?
Like they have balaclavas, or they have the hoods up, and they Jesus. Have, like, their voices garbled identities. Like, it just seems way, way sketchier. And it's Omar, so everyone kind of has a lot of respect for him. And, like, I think they kind of keep offering him, but he's like, no, I'm a recovering drug addict. Because towards the later seasons of The Wire, Michael K. Williams kind of got super into the role of Omar. And he said for a few years he thought he was Omar.
Jesus.
So I think he was, like, getting, like starting fights in nightclubs and stuff. Because people would always just go, yo, it's Omar from The Wire.
I always wonder about that, about long thing. Kind of just takes over your mind a little.
Well, like,
I think acting makes you crazy.
Look at William Shatner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's a good example. But like it's way worse if you're Omar.
Any wrestler ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, any wrestler.
Just even like David for Coronation Street. Where does David end now? Like if you're like on something from when you were like
for like
five,
20 years.
Yeah, up until you're an adult. It's like, who are you?
You're one biddy from Glenroe. What is she now?
Guys, that is going to do it for this episode of the Let's Fight a Boss cast. Email us at askletsfightaboss@gmail.com. What is that, Brian? It's askletsfightaboss@gmail.com.
Sorry, I was thinking about making a play as potion.
Right. That's quite alright. We are the Let's Fight of the Boss cast. We are the strongest video game podcast. We are, quite simply, glorious.
We are. We're doing real well. Like, there's other websites
out
there.
You can cut that part
out.
Yeah,
I will.
Yeah,
okay. I get it.
Fine. I was going to say that we beat game trailers.